Driving back into the harsh sunlight, Ryan saw the brake didn't really help reduce the temp of the engine and could only assume there had to be something wrong with the thermostat. When he got the chance that night, he would open the cooling system and remove the bloody valve completely. The bastard thing was designed to keep the heat in on cold wintry days and channel it off during a hot summer. But since there was only heat in the desert, they had no need for the other function, and it could be safely removed, but not abandoned. While they kept the WAG, they would save any spare parts. Only a fool threw away a blaster, just because nobody was attacking at the moment. JB squinted to the north, and then an excited look appeared on his face.
Vil!
Shifting gears, Ryan headed in the direction the armorer pointed, and soon there rose from the sands a vil of tan bricks. The high walls weren't straight, but extended to points like a star, forming deep passages between each section. Ryan approved. Those were murder alleys, where the vil secman could concentrate their blaster fire to cut down invaders. The lower bricks were shiny with pieces of broken glass studding the surface, and along the palisade were firing slots and some rusty metal frames dangling with nests of rope that Ryan instinctively knew was a lift of some sort for bringing folks in and out of the vil without opening the gate. This was a real hard sight, safe from any army of cold hearts, unless someone had a functioning tank or a working plane. The odds of that, though, were about as unlikely as drinkable rain falling from the tortured sky in this desolate part of the Deathlands. As they got closer, Ryan realized that he wasn't seeing any door or gate in the walls, and drove around the vil in a wide arc until locating one, and then another separated by a starpoint wall. The large doors were both wooden and strapped with metal. The one-eyed man was willing to bet a live round of ammo that only one of those actually opened into the vil. The other would be a sham, a thick door placed in front of a solid wall to make attackers waste time and men by dividing their forces to hit a useless target. Wise thinking. The Baron here was no fool. JB shoved his hat back on and pulled the arming bolt of the Uzi.
Dark night.
I see it.
Ryan ground the damaged clutch as he brought the WAG to a halt in the open sand. Directly in front of the WAG was a low adobe brick wall, only about a foot high, that seemed to circle the entire vil at about 400 feet of distance. Old weathered crosses jutted from the ground, and at one point the skeleton of a man was staked spread-eagle near the little wall, iron spikes driven through the empty sockets of both eyes. The message was clear: cross this line and die. Doc used a strip of canvas to tie his silvery hair off his neck.
In a world of illiterates, this is an easily understandable denouncement. Most elucidating.
Mildred used the barrel of her target pistol to push aside the tattered canvas awning to peek out from the rear of the vehicle.
A simple skull and crossbones would have sufficed.
Oh, no trespassing sign.
His pale skin painfully flushed from the sunlight, Jack took a tiny sip from his canteen, sloshing the water around in his mouth before swallowing. Still hoarding the precious fluid, even with a vil only minutes away. For all he knew, the place was empty, or full of muties. Life had taught him that until it was in your pocket, you didn't have anything for sure.
Must have a lot of cold hearts in the area for them to go to this much bother.
Christy's hair coiled tightly to her head. She was getting a very bad feeling about this vil. Not a sense of direct danger, as if a sniper had them in his crosshairs, but more a sensation of betrayal. Then it was gone. The ghostly impression vanished, like a dream in the night.
Or just one powerful enemy. Might be both.
Turning off the engine, Ryan pushed aside the blankets and stepped out of the vehicle, enjoying the sensation of the desert wind blowing over his sweat-damp clothes. When nothing happened after a few minutes, he pulled a small plastic mirror from his shirt pocket and reflected the bright sunlight along the top of the wall. That should get somebody's attention soon enough. Almost immediately, there was an answering flash, and the huge metal framework loudly creaked as it rotated out over the wall and slowly began to lower something to the sandy ground. Christie's eyes picked out the details of a lone figure.
It's a Secman, packing a blaster, but no Grens in sight.
Dean dried a hand on his shirt before pulling his Browning.
Mighty suspicious folks. Wouldn't even open the door for 7 people.
Yeah. 7 people in a war WAG.
Could be 100 more if it's just over the horizon, as far as they know.
As the man touched the ground, a dozen more people appeared along the angled walls of the Ville, brandishing a wide assortment of long blasters, crossbows, and something that could have been either a piece of stovepipe or a pre-dark anti-tank weapon. It was hard to tell at this range, which was probably the idea. As JB dug out his Navy scope, Christy squinted hard.
Looks real.
It is.
JB lowered the telescope and collapsed it back down.
That's a 70mm recoilless rifle, sort of a baby bazooka. Packs a hell of a punch. Might not be loaded, but even a homemade rocket could send us into a world of hurt.
Mildred, you know what to do.
No problem.
The physician holstered her hand blaster. She took Ryan's Steyr SSG-70 off the front seat and pulled it into the rear of the wag. Back in her day, the black woman had been an Olympic silver medalist for target shooting, and she was the second-best long-distance shooter among the companions. Working the bolt, Mildred checked the clip in the breech to make sure it was fully loaded, then eased the barrel through a slit in the awning, and started adjusting the focus on the scope to find the SecMan on the wall, brandishing the 70mm recoilless. At the first sign of danger, she would put a 7.62mm round of hardball ammunition directly into his front temporal lobe, instantly turning the SecMan into a mindless vegetable. The second round would go into the firing mechanism of the U.S. Army recoilless, rendering it equally harmless before anybody could get off a shot. There was a scorpion design painted on the weapon that made a fine target. Surreptitiously readying the rest of their weapons, the companion stayed still while the lone man walked to the low wall and stopped on the other side. He was lean to the point of gaunt, his light-colored clothing tied off at the ankles and wrists, probably to help keep out the wind-blown sand. A double holster gun belt was strapped around his waist, but only one held a blaster. The original pistol grip was gone, replaced with a dark wood of some kind, polished bright and cut with the pattern of a trippant scorpion. Squinting with his good eye at the Ville, Ryan again approved of their tactics. Why risk losing two blasters when one would do the job?
Where did you find our wag?
The sec man's hand rested on his gun belt, only inches from the shiny blue steel of the revolver.
Thanks for bringing it back. Now get out and start walking.
You mean our wag, Phoebe? And we're not walking anywhere.
Ryan felt a rush of fury at the clumsy trick. He pulled out the Sig Sauer and let the fool look down the barrel.
Now shut the fuck up and bring out the sec boss. We got business to jaw.
The skinny sec man bared a grin, displaying missing teeth.
That's me.
He stabbed himself in the chest with a stiff finger.
I'm in charge here.
Swinging open the passenger side door, JB raised the Uzi into sight.
That's a load of crap. You're the newest sec man the Ville has. Sent out in case we ace first and talk later.
So get your boss and stop wasting our time. You aren't in charge of wiping the Baron's ass.
Startled by the insult, the sec man contorted his face into a mask of rage and started for his blaster, only to freeze at the sound of several hammers locking back on blasters. A few long seconds passed in silence. Then the snarling man eased his hand away from the piece and turned to walk back toward the Ville.
I'll remember you, One-Eye.
His black hair ruffling in the dry wind, Ryan made no comment, but kept the 9mm blaster trained on the man until he was well out of range. Going to the apex of the Ville, the skinny sec man shouted something to the people along the wall. Shortly thereafter, in the second murder alley, there came the squeaking of hinges, and the big door was ponderously raised. A group of armed men on horses rode through the doorway, spreading out so that they wouldn't present a group target in case of a firefight, most of them stopping about 50 feet from the low wall. Only one rider kept going past the boundary until he reined in the animal only yards away from the wag. The engine was ticking steadily as it cooled, and the dry wind swirled the desert dust around their boots like miniature tornadoes. A dusty lizard raced by from out of nowhere and headed into the unknown.